Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. A lot has changed at Horizons of Friendship in the past year. The non-government organization that serves Mexico and Central America experienced a major transition as a new executive director took over. Certainly, familiar programs supporting migrant workers are ongoing. So is the health promotion project in Guatemala. But as the eyes of the world focus on Ukraine and the Middle East, Central America falls into the shadows. Executive Director Rodrigo Koenigs will bring us up to speed on new developments, proposed projects, and the fiscal situation at the Coburg-based organization.
I'm so pleased to have with me today Rodrigo Koenigs, the Executive Director of Horizons of Friendship. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you. Thank you, Robert. Thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure.
Last time we spoke, it was a year ago, and you were new to the job. A year later, what is the biggest difference now as compared to then?
Oh, that's a big question. I think there are two aspects that I need to cover: my personal journey and the organization. In terms of me personally, I feel like I have grown a lot as a leader. This is my first role as executive director. So it's been interesting. I feel like I have learned about how important it is to create a culture of in an organization. You know, what kind of environment you want your colleagues to work at in actually. So I've been focusing a lot in terms of, like, you know, how to lead by an example, and things like that. So it's been an opportunity for personal growth for sure. In terms of the organization, I think we're doing great. Horizons went through a big transition. You know, Patricia retired, and then there was a little bit of a gap in terms of leadership in the organization. So things are more stable. We have a team that is full of energy and passion for what we do. We are setting some goals. We want to start different projects in countries that we are not working on right now, like Honduras or Belize. So yeah, we are doing great. I'm happy with where we are at right now.
The maternal health project was a major long-term initiative that was a huge focus for Horizons. What has replaced it as the centerpiece of the organization?
It was a huge project. So we have two things. We have two paths that we're following. One is that we apply for funding with Global Affairs to have a large project, just like the MNCH. We're gonna hear back from Global Affairs in a month. So hopefully this is going to be good news, and we're going to have another large project that focused also in the same area. But also Horizons is trying to diversify in that sense. We have an ambitious strategic goal, and the goal is to have two projects in each country of Central America and Mexico, well, in what we call Mesoamerica. So we are slowly moving on that direction. We just got a new partnership with a nonprofit in El Salvador called Los Angelitos, which translates into Little Angels. They focus on working with people with disabilities. And also we are in the process of signing another agreement with an organization in Honduras. So we are trying to maximize the impact that the organization has in the region. So in an ideal situation, we'll have both things going on, a big project like MNCH, and also in addition to that, at least two projects going on in each country of Mesoamerica.
I'd like to talk about the new directions you've alluded to already in our conversation a little bit later. I'd like to go back for a moment, though, and talk more about some of the past projects that you've done, and then we'll talk about the new stuff. I'd like to talk for a moment about the migrant workers. This is the time of year when they start coming back to Northumberland, and I know this is a big part of the programming that you do. What are you doing that is new or different?
Yes, it's a big project for us. It's as you know, migrant workers play a fundamental role in the agricultural economy of this country. So we are focusing a lot this year on. So let me just take a step back. Last year, something that we started that wasn't done before was try to focus a lot on mental health. So we partner with another organization in order to make sure that migrant workers have somebody available to talk to. That was successful. And later on, I heard that it was unprecedented. That's something that hasn't been done in the past, at least not here in Ontario. So we were kind of pioneering that concept. So we're planning to continue with that and expand it a little bit. Mental health is very important for anyone. And in the case of migrant workers, being away from home in a country where quite often you don't understand what's the language or you have challenges communicating can be, you know, put you in a precarious situation in terms of mental health. So we're trying to make sure that we have something there to support them. We are also trying to bring a little bit of home to them. That's something new. Last year, we kind of like improvised a little bit. We had a little activity around the Day of the Dead, for example. We deliver some traditional pastries to some of the migrant workers. So we're trying to have a more formal, a more planned approach to that. Last year, you know, I joined in March and the migrant program, the migrant workers arrived in April. So there was a lot of defaults that we were working on, you know, like things that we were doing in the past. But now that we had the opportunity to plan ahead a little bit more, we're trying to focus on that as well. On bringing a little bit of home, you know, like traditions, food, and things like that to the migrant workers.
Let's explore this mental health thing a little bit more, if we could, please. What form does it take?
Yeah, well, we partner with someone. She's a counselor. She's a psychologist. And she's originally from Mexico. Her name is Rosa, and she's wonderful. So she's available to talk to the migrant workers via WhatsApp. WhatsApp is this app that you can make phone calls. She's available anytime. And has worked really well. Also, something that we did that I feel is really good is that we introduced Rosa to the migrant workers. Rosa has been very generous and very caring. So she comes to Coburg and talks to the migrant workers in the events. So they develop this personal relationship. So they know who she is, which makes things easier. As you know, sometimes talking about mental health issues is not something that comes naturally to some individuals. So having the opportunity to meet Rosa in person has made a big difference.
Engaging the community was one of your stated strengths. Tell us what you have done to engage the community over the past year.
I have been connecting with a lot of stakeholders in the community. I have met with the mayor, I also met with a member of parliament as well. I've been connecting with a lot of non-profit organizations in Ontario as well. For example, before this interview, we were just chatting with the people from the consulate, the Mexican consulate. Last year, they had the chance to come to one of our events, and we're planning to collaborate even more with them. We are trying to connect with, for instance, organizations like the Hispanic Club of Northumberland in order to leverage that cultural component together as well. So, those are some examples of the things that we have done. Also, we have expanded the role of our migrant outreach worker to have a more overall outreach role in the community as well. So we can find ways to collaborate with other organizations and individuals in the area.
Have you been able to increase the number of volunteers?
Yes. We have roughly the same number of volunteers in the helping us in the thrift store, but also something new that we have is that we have two wonderful volunteers that have helped in the past. One of them helped with the migrant program, and another one helped us with the, and is still helping us with the social media. So if you follow us on Facebook and others on Instagram, all the wonderful postings that you see there are the work of one of our volunteers.
I'd like to talk a bit about some of the projects that you're working on. And first and foremost is the greenhouse in Mexico. Can you tell us about that project and how it's significant?
We work with a partner called DESME. They're based in Chiapas, which is the south part of Mexico. It's traditionally probably the poorest part of Mexico, and it has a really high percentage of the population is indigenous, and so DESME has been working with those communities to make sure that they have food security in a sustainable way. The greenhouse, which I had a chance to see it in December, it's based in one of those communities, and the goal for them is to be able to grow not only produce but also medicinal plants that are traditional for the indigenous communities. They have this ambitious, very ambitious goal to grow them, to grow those medicinal plants, and also maybe to be able to sell them if they have any surplus. And it's huge, by the way. It's really big.
The Association for Health Promotion, Research and Education is one of your partners in Guatemala. Can you tell us a bit about that project?
PS de Occidente, it's a wonderful partner. We've been working with them for almost 20 years now, in different capacity. This project that we have right now, it has two angles. One of them is to promote education and awareness about reproductive rights and health. So they work with the schools and with government officials in order to create awareness about that. Sex education, but also how to support victims of sexual abuse, which is very important. The other aspect is that PS works directly with a shelter that is for victims of sexual abuse, for minors that are victims of sexual abuse. It's a government-run shelter. They don't have a lot of resources. So PS is provides some additional resources to the shelter. For example, there are roughly 100 survivors in that shelter. All of them are minors, and the shelter has only one psychologist available. Thanks to PS and thanks to the support of our donors, we pay for the salary of another one. So they have two psychologists on site to support them. Also, PS focus a lot on therapies, workshops for the survivors, making sure that they have what they need in order to like have the opportunity to have a successful adult life. I was there, and let me tell you, Robert, it was overwhelming to see that place. There are roughly 150 minors there. As I mentioned it before, 100 of them are survivors of sexual abuse. The other 50 are kids of those survivors. I have two kids, and pretty much I saw, 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds, with babies. And that was a very, very intense experience. So we are very committed to support them as much as we can. And but yeah, that's just to give you an idea, that was the setting of that experience. So PS is doing a wonderful work supporting them. We are committed to continue working with them and support the shelter because those girls need help and as much help that they can get from us.
One of the cornerstones of Horizons has been the educational trips to the South. Mm-hmm. Can you bring us up to speed?
Yes. Internally, we call them the educational tours in Horizons. Horizons, sorry. The educational tours were impacted by COVID first, and then by the changes that Horizons experienced. So we haven't had any yet. We are actually planning to bring them back either by the end of this year or January, February next year. We haven't set on the date yet, but we are working on bringing them back. It's part of our plan for this year, for this fiscal year to do it. We are thinking about having it in Mexico, but that's as far as we have gone in terms of planning. We're gonna bring them back, and it's gonna be in Mexico, but we're still working on the logistics in terms of the dates. I was very inclined to do it in November, for example, because it's a great time to go to Mexico. But also, I heard that traditionally they happen in the past in February, so we are still like trying to figure out when is the best time to do it.
What was the reason for missing this past year?
We weren't ready. I wasn't ready to take on that responsibility. All my team is fairly new. I'm the one that has been with Horizons the longest now. In terms of our ability to deal with that responsibility, we weren't ready yet. But now we are, so we are planning to do it.
I'd like to talk a bit about the fiscal picture for Horizons. Mm-hmm. There was a significant drop in donations from 2022 to 2023, about $30,000. Why was that? And can you explain how you've responded?
2022 to 2023. That's a good question. I guess I caught the tail end of that because I started in March last year. I think I'm gonna be honest. I'm gonna speculate a little bit, but I think it had to do with the transition that Horizons went through. Patricia was the executive director of Horizons for many, many years, and she brought a lot of stability into the organization. And she was wonderful. And I still talk to her quite often because I ask her for advice. But then after that, things got a little bit difficult for the organization. We had a couple of ups and downs in terms of leadership. There was a person that was executive director for a little bit. Then the person departed the organization. We had an interim executive director that kept the organization running, and she's the one that facilitated my recruitment. So I think all those changes had a negative impact in Horizons in terms of engaging our donors in a meaningful way. So my guess is that perhaps those changes were a factor in that.
What is the current fiscal situation?
It's good. It's really good. We actually, our revenue this year, I think, is going to go up. We're going to be spending more also in projects for the same reason. So we are very optimistic about the future.
Is the Canadian government contributing anything to the Horizons of Friendship at this point? I know that in 2022-23, there were no government grants. And I just wonder, with everything going on globally, is the Canadian government still paying attention to areas like Central America and the work that you do there?
We are not receiving any funding from the federal government right now. They had a call for proposals last year, with a focus on women and health. We submitted a proposal. We received a good email from them, and we moved to the next round. So the way it works is that, not to get too technical, but the way it works is that when they launch a call for proposals, you submit what they call a concept note. So you pretty much you tell them what you want to do and your vision for that, and they like what we presented to them. So we move to the next round, and we are hoping to hear back from them in May, so in a few weeks from now. But as for now, no, we don't receive anything from the Canadian government. The budget was released a few days ago, and the Canadian government has increased its commitment to international development. they haven't reached the goal of the 0.07% of the GDP yet, but it's a step in the right direction for sure.
I guess what I was also asking you, though, is in terms of the federal government's priorities in terms of international aid, has there been any change or any trends you've seen towards helping people in Central America?
I think it is to some degree. For instance, just to give an example, circling back to this proposal, the focus on women and mental health, I think the way they presented is that the way it was presented to us was that they had X amount of money available, and one certain percentage of that money was going to be directed to Central America. Not the majority of the money, but some percentage of that. So yes, it's one of their priorities, for sure.
Earlier in our conversation, you began to talk about some new directions that you want to take. And one of the areas that you want to move into is the Honduras. Can you tell us what your aspirations are for that country?
Yes. It's very interesting because, as you know, Horizons just celebrated its 50th anniversary last year. And I just ran into this video. It's a recording of a TV show from 1982, but when they talk about Horizons, and they show a project that we were working on in Honduras, and that reminded me that Honduras is where everything started with Horizons. The very first project that Horizons had was in Honduras. So that kind of re-energized the concept of us, like, you know, like working again there. Right now, we're in the process of finalizing an agreement with an organization that helps women there, young women, with their education. This organization, coincidentally, is the same organization that Horizons was working with in the video that we watched. It was just a coincidence, but it was a happy coincidence. So that's a plan. Our plan is to start a project to support the education of young women, teenagers.
You also mentioned Belize. Can you tell us what you're planning for there?
That's still a little bit more of a longer term. We were looking at the data. There's something called the Human Development Index. And some regions of Belize, inland, have a very low Human Development Index that can be comparable to, you know, the lowest income countries in the region. So we have the goal to try to see if we can develop a project there. We haven't taken any specific steps at this point. It's kind of like aspirational, but we are thinking about doing that, and that would be something new for us, because traditionally Horizons has only focused in the Spanish speaking countries of Central America. So Belize hasn't, as far as I'm aware of, we can never work there. So that will be something new for us.
You also mentioned in our conversation El Salvador. You want to do some new things there. Can you share what those ideas are?
We just signed a small agreement for scholarships with this organization called Los Angelitos. They are a wonderful organization. They work with people with disabilities, and it's amazing. They have this like network of volunteers that go to their homes and provide them therapy and classes. So they do both like physical and educational support. My plan is to start working on a bigger project with them soon, maybe in a month or two. to give them a more like long-term support. But they're wonderful. It was so inspiring because what they do is not easy at all. They have a small team of professionals, like people that went to school to learn about how to provide therapy to people with different with a wide range of disabilities, and they actually train members of the communities that volunteer their time to provide those supports.
So what can we expect in the upcoming months from Horizons of Friendship? What should we be looking for?
Locally, I think you can expect a bigger presence in the community. We want to be more proactive. We want to create awareness about what we do. We want to engage people and talk to them. Also, we want to engage different organizations and have meaningful conversations about how we can collaborate. I think that's what can you expect from us.
Rodrigo Konigs, thank you so much for talking to me today.
My pleasure.
That was Horizons of Friendship Executive Director Rodrigo Konigs. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.